nice to talk with you today about one of my favorite topics and one of the topics I think most people hate. So I'm not sure if you signed up because you love workplace politics, or if you don't want like workplace politics, or if you just want to figure out what to do. But whatever reason you signed up, I hope you can get, I can give you what you're looking for. Let's start with our objective. So first we're going to start with defining workplace politics. Then we'll talk about how communication and power and values apply to workplace politics, and basically some preventive strategies for building strong relationships, building a good reputation, doing good things so that you can kind of have some protection against negative workplace politics. Then we'll talk about reactive strategies for psychologists and other mental health professionals around managing workplace politics. And then we have some examples at the end so we could see how we're doing and how it's going on this. So as Danielle mentioned, some of you know me. I've been working with UCLA and DMH for, gosh, at least 4 or 5 years now, definitely pre-pandemic. So working with them for a while, and I do a lot of things, a lot of which are a lot of they are around management and leadership in public health, public mental health agencies, city, state, county departments of health, and departments of mental health. So I love working with this stuff. And if I haven't met you yet, I look forward to meeting you. So first step is, how do we define politics? What does politics mean? And you can definitely chime in the chat if you want. So here's how I'm defining politics. Politics are processes and behaviors between people to get things done and get needs met. So many times when we think of politics, we think of negative politics or dirty politics or somebody talking behind our back or something awful. Politics are just the way we get things done. And I don't mean that in a snide way of like, that's just how the world works. You got to grease palms. I don't mean it like that. Politics gets a lot of bad names. But politics are how we get things done. And it's basically this process of building a reputation, building a network, having relationships, figuring out how to get things done and how to get needs met. Where politics goes wrong is when the things to get done may be negative things or nefarious things, like getting somebody fired or making someone embarrassed, and getting needs met, as you all know, as mental health professionals, can sometimes be a bit messed up, where sometimes people have needs that may not be within the realm of what we would like to see in the workplace. So, for example, if someone is very narcissistic, they ha may have needs that a whole workplace may not be able to meet, and yet their behaviors might get continue to try to get those needs for affection, for adoration, for whatever met. So I'm not going to go too far into personality disorders, but just kind of the idea of politics are just what we do to get things done. So one of my questions for you is, how do you deal with workplace politics? And you could put it in the chat. How do you deal with workplace politics? And what are your challenges around workplace politics? I'd like to make sure I understand maybe why you came to this presentation and what your concerns are. I know nothing about politics. Hey, fair enough. Great. I hate politics. Great. You deal by listening to the rules that are put in place. You smile and wave. I love it. Let's see, challenges around different generations working, viewing and working through workplace politics to get things done, or challenges around what's appropriate. So last, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about intergenerational differences. So if you want to take a look at that presentation, that may help specifically with generational differences. Staying up to date, observing how they can unfairly advantage or disadvantage staff members. Like it, lend everyone that ear and view their voice. Make sure you're fair and consistent, express my opinions. Challenging when thinking about accountability and different styles. Excellent. Trying to be diplomatic while maintaining integrity. Awesome. 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 Thank you. Thank you for all of your ideas around how you deal with workplace politics, including I try not to deal with workplace politics at all. So I'm going to divide this into two sections. The first is proactive strategies. So these are the kinds of things you can do to set yourself and your staff up for success related to politics. And then once we get through this section, I'll talk about reactive strategies, which are what to do when things go south. So the general idea is learn about your organization and learn about yourself and kind of become a scientist. You don't have to become a scientist with a microscope and test tubes and all that, but learn about, be curious about how other people interact with each other. Observe different things that I'll talk about in just a moment. And if you're like me, you went into mental health or behavioral health because you're really interested in people or interested in learning more about them, about yourself, about groups of people. I am fascinated by that. So I have been observing people and organizations probably all my life, as have many of you. So I'm going to walk through some ways to kind of think through how to make sense of your observations and how to use that information to develop proactive strategies about workplace politics. So the first one is increasing self-knowledge, so knowing yourself. Clarifying your values and your role are really important. And if you're a supervisor, clarifying for your staff their role and clarifying any differences in values that you may be experiencing between your values, your staff's values, the organization's values, your boss's values. We're never going to all be 100% on the same page because we're all different people, but being aware and being clear of what your values are and what your role is can help you attack workplace politics situations that are negative really easily. Finding opportunities to build skills. And this is a place, again, for supervisors. If you've attended any of my training, you've heard me talk about this before. You have all your mental health skills as a social worker or a community advocate or whatever your role is. And you also may have the skills of being a manager. And then I would add all of these skills. Resilience, negotiation, networking, patience, communication, all of those are just life skills of things we need to do to be able to get along with other people in the workplace and outside of the workplace. And I can certainly say some of these I am still working on. I'm still working on patience. I'm still working on resilience. So you may have strengths in some of these. You may have places you want to work on, but there are opportunities to build those skills. Self-care. I know you've all heard a lot about self-care. It is the race is long. And so making sure that you take care of yourself and you don't have to tackle everything right away. Identifying your blind spots. This one's sometimes hard because, of course, they're blind spots. We can't see them. I'll talk in just a moment about how you can do this. But if you happen to have a spot where it's just really hard for you to understand something, or you keep missing something and it's a pattern, trying to identify that and find ways to work around it can be really helpful. And then finally, as you're going along your self-knowledge route, address your limiting internal barriers and mindsets. So these are things within you that may limit you in ways you might not even fully understand. So self-defeating thoughts like, I'll never be a supervisor, or this is as far as I can go, or something like that. Self-sabotaging beliefs, because those are things that basically, right when you start doing well, you kind of kick yourself down. Why do we do this? Who knows? We have lots of things going on in our background. I can give another totally different lecture around why we do these things. Giving up this need to be liked. This one's tough, especially for supervisors, because you're a people person, right? Most of us in the helping professions are people, and want to be liked. And plus, it's normal, it's human to be liked. And there's a difference between being willing to do the job and do what it takes and needing to be liked. And there's also a difference between doing the job right and then just being a jerk about it. I'm not advocating being a jerk, but sometimes our need to be liked can get in our way. And then, of course, confirmation bias, where we look for things to just reinforce our opinions as opposed to actively looking for things that might challenge our views. So, how do you increase your self-knowledge? How do you find those blind spots? So, first is ask for feedback. You can ask colleague, friend, family member, people that you trust to be fair with you And also people you trust to be honest. So for some of you, if you ask your mom's going to say, "You are amazing. You're my little boy or little girl. You will always be my kiddo, and I think you're amazing." That is wonderful if that's what your mom says, but that is not helpful feedback toward increasing your self-knowledge. So ask someone who's willing to be direct with you. Maybe your mom's like, "Well, let me tell you, I've got a list of things you can do differently." You may want to ask a trusted supervisor. And notice the word trusted in there. If you don't trust these folks, even if they're your supervisor, to give you their honest opinion with your best interests in mind, don't open yourself up necessarily. There's other people you can ask. Find other people to ask. But you want to make sure that someone's you're not opening yourself up to get kicked here. You don't want someone who's going to use it as an opportunity to hurt you or use it against you. Of course, coaching and mentoring, and some of you on the call, I may be coaching now. You can get coaching or mentoring in different ways, and some of it through DMH, some of it in other ways. Of course, there's therapy, mental health professionals, we all love therapy. There's education. So there's formal education that you can do for like a course in psychoanalysis or something like that. You can also do informal education by reading books. There's tons of self-help books out there around whatever kinds of things you want to learn about yourself. And of course, making sure you increase your cultural awareness. You're not just increasing your knowledge only about yourself in a vacuum, but about the culture in which we all operate. And then finally, there are some assessments that a therapist or a coach or someone like that can do to help you understand, like there's personality tests or there's work styles approaches. There's lots of different things in there that are possible. The second part is about understanding your organization. And this is where becoming a scientist comes into this. Like, what's happening in my organization? And these are some things when you're watching, you're all observing what's happening, trying to make sense of these so that you can understand your role in the workplace politics. So one is attitudes between teams and groups. So I've worked with groups where there's maybe five groups working together. I'm with group one, and group one hates group two. I don't know why. I just got here. But group one hates group two. They love group three. Group four can do no wrong. And group five, they just refuse to talk to, right? Who knows how these things happen? But what's going on? What do you see happening that's related to the politics that go on, and that's related to the kind of game that's being played that you don't necessarily know is being played? The second part is taking a look at what happens when decisions are made. Now, we all know it's not possible for every decision in a workplace to be, democratically determined and we all discuss and vote. Like that's not a workplace. But how open are decisions? How transparent are decisions? Sometimes, of course, things are out of our control. But when there's some opening, when there's an option, are your supervisors or your colleagues open to talking about things? Are they not open to talking about things? Are people generally transparent and clear about the kinds of things that are on their plate or no? So, kind of thinking about that part. This one is one of my favorites. How connected are policies to their implementation? So everyone knows there's the set of rules that's what's written down, and then there's what actually happens. Generally, in healthier organizations, those two things are pretty close together. So what the rules say do and what actually happens are pretty close. In some organizations, however, those are really far apart. The policies and the things we're supposed to do are very different from what actually happens. And sometimes that can be within only certain groups. It can be organization-wide. And this is the kind of stuff that can get you in trouble if those policies are related to regulations and safety issues and legal stuff. That can be a problem. At this point, I'm not asking you to solve the problem, but just identify, are there rules that aren't being followed? Are there ways in which your boss or your colleagues are upholding the policies? Do they clarify? Well, the instruction is this. So, how do we handle this situation? It's a good thing. clarifying what happens after policies or decisions or changes communicated. Does everyone groan and say, oh, not another change to the electronic health record or the finance system? Do people say, wow, we've been asking for this change. We appreciate that. Or most likely something in between. How does that go? What happens when those things happen, when those things are communicated? Or are people saying, wow, you wait until the day after it goes live to actually tell me there's a change happening, right? That's an important piece of information too. So as you're observing, you are being a scientist and you're making hypotheses about how people are connected. So some thoughts about how to be a better communicator. So one is to work hard to build trust and credibility. This is reputation management. Now, most people don't even think about their reputation, which is fine. You don't have to. But if you want to be more political, more, I should say, more savvy about politics, work hard to pay attention to your reputation and create a reputation, build a reputation that is what you want it to be. Some people want a reputation as being real hard nosed. That person's a jerk, whatever. Some people want a reputation as being really nice and soft and just friendly to everybody. For many of us, it's kind of in the middle where we can make the hard decisions and we can be nice, and we want to be, most importantly, trustworthy and credible. And that's what's most important to us. So thinking about what's important to you, how do you want people to see you? And then work to build that reputation by demonstrating and living those values. Treat everyone with respect. This one's just kind of a no-brainer, but sometimes we get upset and we are disrespectful to people. And that's important to observe if we see our colleagues, our boss treating people with disrespect. And it's also important to treat everyone with respect. That will mean that when we do communicate with them, they're much more likely to listen to us. Here's a savviness suggestion here around being savvy. Communicate messages that are aligned with organizational goals, especially, I would say, if you're a supervisor. When you communicate with others, whether they're your peers, people junior to you, people senior to you, clarify how they're aligned with organizational goals. And this can help make sure everyone is very clear. You know what you're doing, and you're clear about the reasons why you're doing what you're doing, and you want to make sure other people understand that too. To be a better communicator, take responsibility. So if you say something wrong, or if you make a mistake, if you mess up, fess up, be open about it and apologize. The power of an apology can go a really long way. I'm realizing this 1 hour can probably be like 10 hours here. We could probably spend a whole hour on each of these slides. So I'm giving you the quick and dirty summary of this to give you a lot of skills that you can start working on now. And then happy to, we can talk about them another time or in coaching or in another training if there's specific things you want to follow up on. Especially for supervisors, be a role model. You don't have to be perfect, but try. Try to do things the way you want to do them. I don't mean you have to try to be perfect. Try to do things the way you want to do them in line with the goals and values that you have. Make sure you address problems quickly and directly. This is often a challenge for, I would say, people at everywhere, every place of the org chart around. If you're a junior person, sometimes you don't want to bring up a problem with your boss. If you're a boss, sometimes you're uncomfortable about bringing a problem up with a junior person or with your boss. But the more you can quickly and directly address the problems, the better it is for you to stay out of those negative politics. If you don't address the problems, then they start festering. Or maybe you talk to someone else about it, and then word gets around that you're complaining about your boss or something like that. That can get really sticky really fast. So to the extent you can say, hey, I noticed this. It doesn't feel quite right. Or I thought you said we should do this. Or even just, can you help me understand? It's one of my favorite phrases. I noticed this. Can you help me understand? That's starting to address the problem. And then, of course, communicate strategically to make sure people know what you're doing. And this is not having a, every conversation is about look at me, how amazing I am. It's more, I just wanted to tell you what's happening. This is also helpful to share about other people. So I could go into a meeting and say, Danielle worked with me on this project and she was really amazing. She is just so insightful and I really appreciate her. And then somebody in the meeting is going to go back to Danielle and say, Jennifer was saying nice things about you. And then Danielle's going to feel good. And I'm going to feel good. We're all going to feel good. Great. Right? Share the good stuff that you're doing, that your team's doing, and that your colleagues are doing. Politics often involves power. And there's kind of three main kinds of, there's more kinds of power, but these are the three main kinds of power I want us to talk, focus on today. So one is referent power. So this is, you have power because you know people. So people who are close with the director or with the boss's boss, or they go way back, that's a kind of referent power. You have some power because you know people. Expert power is when you have knowledge, you know stuff. And you know stuff about the work that is having, that is going on, and you know how to answer people's questions, that sort of thing. So that's expert power. And then finally, excuse me, finally, informational power is having information other people don't. So some people just always seem to be tied into the pulse of the organization and they know what's coming down the pike. They know that somebody's going to get, that there's going to be layoffs, or they know there's people getting hired, or the budget's just been doubled, or whatever. Some people have that informational power. You probably have more power than you think. Most people I've worked with have a lot more power than they think. So if you want, you can go through these and think, okay, who do I know? And it could be at work, it could be outside of work. What do I know? What is my expert power? And then what kind of information do I have? How can I use that to help people? And of course, the power, I want you to use your power for good, but how can I use that to help people? So ways you can increase your power, learning about trends in the field. You can look at discussions around what's happening in mental health, in community mental health, in homelessness services, in whatever specific area of the field you're in. There's lots of information available online, professional associations, and so on. Learn more about the organization. That gives you informational power and probably expert power. And if you're interviewing people or asking them questions about what they do, that can give you referent power too. So that one could be briefer. Understanding the organization's goals and priorities, these always get published, and a lot of people don't pay attention at all. I'm not saying it's right. In fact, I don't think that's right. I think we should know what our organization's strategic goals and priorities are. So learn them, read the information when it comes out. Be kind and diplomatic. Again, that gets back to your reputation. As you build that reputation, you will get more power. People will see you, assuming you're building a positive reputation, people will see you as having knowledge, as being someone fair to go to when I have a question or someone who can give me a straight answer. That's a really good thing, and that is definitely power. Becoming indispensable can also be helpful. Some of you have unique skills and different niches that you operate in. That can be helpful as well. Support when asked. Notice that doesn't say offer support all the time when you're not asked, but certainly when asked. Sometimes you can offer when you're not asked, but definitely when you're asked, make sure you step up. Try to get a seat at the table. Especially for folks who are interested in moving up in the ranks, getting a seat at the table where the decisions are made can be extremely helpful. And then make sure you do stuff when you're there. Figure out how to make it work. And if you don't know what to do now that you have a seat at the table, start asking questions. Ask people around you about, help me understand what this committee does or what this group does, and so on. And then, of course, reinforcing the organizational goals and your alignment with them. Another key role about, around politics is negotiating. The first part is recognize when you're in a negotiation situation. And I had a fantastic negotiation speaker teacher who would try to negotiate everything just for practice. She'd go to a hotel and say, "Can I get an upgrade?" She'd go to a restaurant and say, "Can I get that table instead?" She wouldn't practice negotiation. And she got really, really good at it. I mean, she was expert negotiator. But recognize when you're in a negotiation situation, and it may be more situations than you think. You don't want to be argumentative, but is there wiggle room? And one of the places I always try to get on if I ever am faced with an either or decision, I need to do this or that. I try to make myself remember to think, can I do both? How can I get the best of both worlds in a way that works for me and works for the other people? So a lot more things may be negotiable than you think. It's not personal. This should be on a huge billboard. Don't take it personally. None of this stuff is personal. Even if it feels personal, it's usually not about you, it's about them. When you're negotiating, seek a mutually beneficial solution. Some people, when they get in a negotiation, they want to use it to pound on the other person and make the other person lose. You can do that, but that also affects your reputation, that affects your power. And most likely, there will come a time if you do that, that you are the low person in the situation and you don't have the power. So that kind of stuff goes around and comes around. But trying to seek a mutually beneficial solution that's aligned with the organization. Of course, you want to choose your battles. You don't want to be argumentative all the time. Think about what you want to get out of the conversation. Sometimes we want to talk about content. I want to take next week off. Is that okay? Sometimes we want to talk about process. Help me understand why you're, disapproving my leave request, or how do leave requests work around here? Can we understand that? Or can you help me understand why, it feels like you're angry at me for requesting leave? Can you help me understand? So content, process, or both is fine, but just know what you want. What's confusing and what makes it hard to be successful in a negotiation is if you intertwine content and process and it's all mixed up together and you're not clear what you're talking about, which one you're talking about. And then, of course, sometimes people don't play fair. It really stinks. But if they're not playing fair, you need to modify your approach. And I am absolutely guilty of this. I insist on believing that they are playing fairly, even when I'm faced with evidence to the contrary. So if it becomes clear that they're not playing fair, think about how you can modify your approach, get some feedback, get some assistance to work with you on this negotiation. Okay, we're still in the proactive activities here. So these are all things you can do to help make you more negative politics proof. So asking for and giving feedback gracefully. So giving feedback, make sure you understand, try to ask a lot of questions. Don't save it up, especially if you're a supervisor. Your end of year performance should not be like all the things you've done wrong all year that I never told you about, and then I lump them all on you at once. No. Give it freely so people understand what they're doing in the moment and give them options around how they can do things differently. So being clear and specific, and of course you've heard this, praise in public, correct in private, or positive feedback in public, negative feedback in private. Getting feedback. I find a lot of people are really uncomfortable asking for feedback, or they think they're doing great and they have no need to ask for feedback. I often ask for feedback. You don't want to ask every single day, all the time, but periodically asking for feedback, even of your peers or of your supervisees, if you're a supervisor, can be really helpful. And the framing I almost always use is I'd like to talk about how things are going or how I can be of assistance. What's working well? What's working not well? And that frame, what's working well, what's not working well, can be a really helpful way to ask for feedback. Be specific if there's something specific you want. And I mentioned this to a coaching client earlier. I really wanted to work on being calm. Clearly, it's not working. I just got too much energy here, but I wanted to work on being calm. And I asked a person, a colleague of mine, I'm working on this. Can you give me feedback? When you see me being calm, when you see me being not calm, can you give me feedback? And then, every couple of weeks we would catch each other in the hall and she would say, oh, I wanted to point out this, or I wanted to point out that, or what you're doing is working. Great. But ask for what you need from someone you trust. Prepare for the performance reviews. Try to get an accurate sense of where you're at. And of course, as bosses, make sure you're not saving it up. And then ask what you can do differently, what you can do better. It's hard to not be defensive sometimes. So don't argue, but try to listen to the feedback and then think about it. If you want to discuss it or argue about it, maybe come back the next time to discuss, not argue. Woo! Okay, so those are all proactive strategies. These are things you can do to help make your work, your reputation better, make your workplace better, build a culture around yourself that focuses on integrity, communication, fairness, whatever the things are that you want to emphasize. So, as we know, sometimes things go south, and this might be the juicy part that you're waiting for. I have this whole inventory of ways people behave poorly. So let's talk about some of these things. So they're divided into overt and covert. And then there's some others as well. So overt poor behavior is when people are doing something, usually like out in the open, where some people know what's happening, but it's right there in your face. So a backroom deal where your boss or someone goes behind your back and makes some deal and excludes you. Backstabbing, we all know what backstabbing is. When someone's saying negative things about you when you're not there. Triangulation, where someone will go, most commonly, there's a lot of family therapists here, someone will go to mom, mom says no, they go to dad. So someone can go to one boss or then they go to another boss, or it could also be when you're all at the same level and two people are, one person's playing two people differently. When people have a hidden agenda that they're not telling you about, of course, we all can keep secrets, but at the same time, we can have secrets, but at the same time, if someone's trying to make something happen and they're not telling you about it, that can be a challenge. Scapegoating, where you get blamed or someone gets blamed for all the things that are going wrong, whether they're responsible for them or not. Sabotaging, I have seen this happen, where they're really hurting a person, and keeping them from being able to, be successful in their job. Blocking, where they're blocking either advancement or access or knowledge, keeping someone from getting that. We're all familiar with passive aggression. Some of the covert poor behaviors, undermining, where they may say one thing to your face and something else to someone else, or they may give you an activity or an assignment where you have responsibility, but you have no authority, or where they're subtly or actively chipping away at your authority. Belittling, we're familiar with when people are condescending or make you try to make someone feel yucky. Invalidating and gaslighting go hand in hand about these are kind of more insidious ways of really trying to get in your head and make you feel like your perceptions aren't real. Dismissing, I've certainly seen people who are quite condescending just be dismissive, like, or I don't talk to these people. I've worked in hospitals before where the physicians dismissed anyone who wasn't an MD. They had nothing to do with them. And it was a real hierarchy. And it was really unfortunate because I'm sure they were lovely people in other ways, but all of this takes a team. Like, there's no way to operate as a team if one group is dismissing the other group. I've also seen where, community advocates or people who are more junior and not licensed individuals will dismiss other people because they have licenses. Well, they got all their education from a book, so they don't know what it's really like, right? So dismissing is hurtful and harmful, no matter who's doing the dismissing. Gossiping, a lot of times gossiping gets around a lot more than it should, and can be more harmful, not only in wasting time, of course, but also in just kind of keeping things going on. And speaking of gossiping, I heard Melrose Place is going to be rebooted. So if that happens, I am totally down for that. All of these things happen on Melrose Place. Sure. Covert means that these are things that happen more behind the scenes. It's not an exact perfect activity way of dividing them, but overt behaviors are things that happen like right in front of you, and covert behaviors are more things that happen behind the scenes. And I'm realizing they don't quite match up here. So don't worry about the covert overt. That part's less important. Yes, interrupting would be great to add to the list. Just kind of that constant interrupting, which can also be dismissing, belittling, some of those invalidating, undermining, all of those could be there. I think gossip can be a covert poor behavior. Yeah, I guess it depends on whether who you are in the gossiping situation, but if people are gossiping about you, that's covert and that's not helpful. And gossiping is when you're saying things about people that either that may be salacious, so they're just there's no actual value to the work in what you're saying, or they're designed to raise suspicion or questions about people. And I have a whole unit on gossip if we want to talk about gossip. I grew up on Melrose Place, so gossip is a big part of my childhood. But gossiping can be really harmful, and I think it's worth kind of looking at that. It's really easy to get into this cycle of complaining, and I'm sure you've all seen this before. People get together, complain about this, complain about that. Ooh, yeah, that can happen, and that's not great. I wouldn't put it in one of these categories, just merely complaining, but sometimes it can become more harmful if it starts being targeted, untrue, or it's designed to create problems. Bad mouthing, of course, if you're saying bad things about people, upstaging, trying to get more credit than you deserve. Okay, bulldozing, when basically you're just running over anybody's possible protests, and then railroading, where you're trying to force someone to make a decision more quickly than they're comfortable with, and you're really not letting up on them. And then finally, in our catalog of people who behave poorly, we have additional poor behavior, microaggressions, which you're probably familiar with, where people say little things that aren't as direct, but also that are still harmful, like making assumptions that because of your race or gender or age, that you don't know things, or that you do know things, or that you are a certain way. Those can be problematic, even if they're not, doesn't rise to the level of racism or sexism or ageism or ableism, but they're still just harmful enough to feel not good. We have the classics there: racism, sexism, ageism, and ableism, all the isms around people who treat people differently because of their characteristics. We have bullying, which is unfortunately very common in many workplaces. And then, of course, harassment, when things get to harassment's the one legal term on here where sexual harassment is against the law. The rest of these, poor behavior. And could potentially be evidence of harassment. But if you are harassed because of your race, sex, age, or ability status, that could be a challenge. Okay, those are this. You'll get these slides later, so you don't have to memorize these or write them all down. Danielle will make sure you have access to the slides. But that is lots of ways that people behave poorly. So what do you do? Whew, when people do this kind of stuff, it really stinks. So here's a bunch of steps, and then we'll walk through kind of a more brief version as well. So step one is recognize the behavior. If you are wondering, like, am I crazy? What is happening here? Did we not just discuss that last week? That is a red flag that maybe something's going on. It could just be forgetful. I like to assume good intent, but if things keep going on, or if you feel targeted, or if other people are saying, hey, that person doesn't treat you fairly, you can potentially become more clear about exactly what's happening. Evaluating your contribution. People usually bristle at this one. I didn't do it. They're the one who did it. Correct. They are responsible for their behavior. Is there anything I'm doing that may be contributing to what's happening? Not blaming the victim. It's just saying, is there anything that I could maybe change that could potentially change the situation? Again, they are responsible for their behavior, but there may be some way that you are contributing to it. Understanding your boundaries. I am working with a client where this is a boss who asks for help, and the boss is a jerk. That's my professional opinion. Boss is a jerk. Their staff, I've asked to interview the staff, and most of the staff are like, yeah, the boss is a jerk. Also, we know that, we can't really do anything about it, and I need this job and this and that. They have particular boundaries they want to hold. And they also say, if he says this again, that's over the line, and I'm going to complain. Okay, so they know the boundary of what I will take and what I won't accept. That's important to know. And sometimes you don't know what that boundary is until somebody's pushed past it. And then it feels really yucky, and you might need, the help of a colleague or a friend or somebody to help you walk through it. But understand what is your line, at which point I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to ignore it, versus my line of I'm going to say something to the person, or I'm going to do something differently and change my behavior. And then another boundary is I'm going to report this either to my supervisor or their supervisor or to someone else. Kind of those are different boundaries. We don't all want to say, I don't like this thing, so I'm going to immediately report it. That's probably not the best boundary in a workplace. Assuming good intent, I talked about that. Sometimes people forget stuff. Sometimes people are just, I don't know, it just doesn't work out well. The odds are not in our favor. Sometimes that happens. I try to assume good intent and then collect more information. Remember being a scientist, so you understand what's going on around you. Seeking consultation, of course, talking to a colleague, a friend, a boss, someone that you trust who can give you a perspective on it. And sometimes, kind of a bonus with this one, if you talk to someone senior about an issue and just say, I just want to get your perspective on this. I'm not sure I understand. Help me understand. There's that phrase again. Sometimes when you talk through that, like, I don't want you to do anything. I'm just trying to get your feedback for, are my expectations off? Am I missing something here? Sometimes that boss will kind of go around and solve the problem for you, which is amazing when that happens. You can't expect that, but sometimes they will help. Whoever you seek consultation from might assist you. Avoiding problems. We talked about that before. So think this gets back to your boundaries. What is my boundary? If I agree that I'm not going to say anything, then I need to not kind of behave in a passive aggressive way toward the person who's doing the poor behavior. Meaning, if I agree I'm going to let it go, then I need to let it go. If I'm not going to let it go, then I need to do something. So sitting in that place of, I don't like this, it's unfair. I feel like I'm being targeted, but I don't want to say anything, but I'm still unhappy. That's a bad place to be. So avoiding the problem and decide when you're ready to do something. When you are ready to do something, which is likely talking to someone else or potentially filing a report or a complaint, prepare for what you want to say. Try to keep it just to the facts. You can use the I statements. I felt this way when you did this, or I look at the action, impact, and request. So when you did this action, here's the impact it had on me, and here's what I requested step. And obviously, if someone's a real jerk, that's probably not going to work very well with them, but it's a good first step. They may not change their behavior immediately, but at least it can work. You said, how can you help your direct report take action? Do you mean about someone they're feeling that they're being mistreated by? Yes. Okay. So you can help them by helping them walk through these steps. So what exactly is happening? Is there a contribution that you're making? What is your boundary? Where is this okay for now? It just makes you a little uncomfortable versus this is not okay and I need to speak up. And then you can talk them through, how do you want to approach this? And I'm going through some of the steps right now around preparing for whatever the conversation is that's needed, addressing it as much as you can constructively, kindly, and clearly. The point is not to turn the other person into a jerk. It's more of a sense of, here's what's happening. Here's the impact it's having. Can we talk about it? And unfortunately, Prue, if you're a staff member, if your direct report refuses to speak up, you are a bit limited. It may be possible if you can figure out how to observe the behavior yourself, you can then speak to the person, or if they're maybe the person who's behaving poorly is somewhere else, then you can talk to their supervisor and say, hey, I heard this was happening. I don't know if you've seen it. And then they might be able to step up. It's really hard if something only happens in secret or hidden from your sight, and the other person doesn't want to speak up. That's really hard. You can encourage them to speak up and also acknowledge there's sometimes penalties for speaking up. So if you do this to someone, if you speak up and you try to be constructive and kind and clear, it's very possible the other person's still going to feel angry and threatened. And that could happen. Trying to be graceful and then trying to get some feedback on how it went. Sometimes when I'm having an awkward conversation with someone, I start out by saying, okay, this is going to be an awkward conversation. I just want to prep you. And they're like, oh, okay, now they're curious. So I talk about whatever it is. And then whenever we get to the end, however it turns out, I often say, okay, we just finished an awkward conversation. How did that go for you? And usually they're like, oh, it was fine. It wasn't that awkward. Great. Or they say, you know, it was really awkward. Okay, is there a different way I could have brought that up? Is there some way we could have done this better? You know, you can ask and get feedback either from the person, or if it doesn't go well, you can ask someone else for their feedback and replay it for them. Okay, so I have some scenarios here where I want to find out from you what you might do in this situation. So the questions for you are, what is your boundary? And then how might you approach this situation? So the situation is a colleague is taking credit for your work. What do you do? And you can type it in the chat or you can take yourself off mute and shout it out. And let's assume for the sake of discussion that this isn't the first time they've done it. Take the credit back. Address the issue. How might you address the issue? Ask them why they did that. That's great. Hey, I wrote that paper. And when you shared it with our boss, you mentioned that you said that you did it. Can you help me understand what happened? Try to speak with the colleague first. You may want to ask your supervisor for assistance in how to manage this. You may want to set the record straight. So something that happens a lot to people of color and to women on calls is often that they say something and no one hears it, and then a guy says it or someone else says it, and suddenly it gets heard. So I've tried an approach, doesn't work all the time, but saying, you know, Bob, I really appreciate that comment, especially since I mentioned it about 10 minutes ago, and I'm really happy that the team is listening to it. You know, that can sound a little passive aggressive. I get it, but often that can at least call attention to the issue. So supporting the team, ignoring them, and making sure my supervisor knows I did the work, totally reasonable response if that's what you want to do. Totally. Bring it up directly, share how it impacts you. Great. Asking to share. Ask how they contributed. Yeah, absolutely. Help me understand. And then definitely approach a new project with that person differently. Awesome. Ah, you're great. You're great. Okay, next one. Your colleagues gossip. And let's say your colleagues gossip about you. What would you do? What is your boundary and how might you approach it? Ignore it? Totally. Some things can be ignored. But if people are, sometimes it's too difficult to ignore. So how would you approach that? Let it go. Try not to let it bother you. Haters stay mad. Speak to my supervisor first. Absolutely. So there's some kinds of gossip like, trying to think of like kind of more harmless gossip about like, did you see what she was wearing? Blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, so that's one thing. But other kinds of gossip can be really harmful. Things like, I heard she got in trouble at school, or I heard that he is having a relationship with this person that we work with, or, you know, that they did something. I heard this person did something unethical or wrong, but I don't want to say anything about it, right? That kind of gossip can be really harmful. If that's going around and it doesn't get stopped. So I absolutely hear you can choose to ignore it. You could choose to not engage in the conversation. You could go to HR, absolutely. You could bring it up directly with the team. So again, this how you approach it may is different based on what your boundary might be. Reflect on what they're gossiping about. Yeah, if it's empty gossip, then talk to somebody you trust. Absolutely. Listen, but don't contribute. Yeah. What I try to do is, I mean, it depends. It's been a while. I guess I'm not that gossip worthy. I need a more salacious and fantastic life. But people, if people are saying something and I heard they said something about me, sometimes I'll go back. Sometimes I'll just ignore it. But other time, I'll go and say, you know, I heard a rumor. I heard you were talking about me and said this. Did that happen? That doesn't seem like you. Or, you know, there might be a way that I can kind of add a little humor to it to say, it, you know, even if they deny it, say, I just want to clarify that is not what happened. And if you hear anything through the grapevine, could you direct that person to please talk with me about it? I'm happy to share the information. And then maybe talk with them about, so how do you think this got started? Even if you know they did it and they're saying they didn't, that's okay. How do you think this got started? I don't know. This is weird. Yeah. All right. So reflect on what they're gossiping about. Listen, but don't contribute. A boss who gossips and turns people against each other, that really stinks. And one of the best ways to address that is making sure that all of your team, trying to get your team members on the same page so they don't get turned against each other. I had a boss who would do that too. And whenever the boss would tell one person something, they would come back and tell the whole group. We would sort out what was actually true, and then we would go from there. Okay. It's a lot about gossip. Your boss undermines you. So making you responsible for things that you have no authority to do, maybe saying negative things about you. This could potentially overlap with gossip a little bit. You're doing your thing, and then your boss pulls the rug out from under you. What is your boundary, and how might you approach this? What if you are the center of gossip among your colleagues? So I try not to even listen to gossip. If people are gossiping, I try to not play along because then that kind of reinforces that I'm okay with gossip, which I am not. So, if you're the center of gossip, it might be talking to one of those people that you trust the most and say, hey, I keep hearing through the grapevine that there's a lot of gossip going on. Can you help me about me? Can you help me understand? And so on. And trying to find someone that you trust that can help you with that. Definitely, if it's harmful gossip, if they're gossiping about, you know, that you did something unethical or whatever, then that's something to start getting your boss involved in or get HR involved in. Let's see. So your boss undermines you. Follow-up email every time documenting. Absolutely. Love it. That documenting helps a lot. I know some people who just send an email to themselves and copy their private email so that way it has a time and date stamp on it. Set limits about what you're willing to do. Great. Let's see. A boss is new and transferred from another team, causing stress and anger. My goodness. Going th so sometimes that could just be kind of transition pains, but other times it could be some of these poor behaviors that are happening. I think trying to identify what's working, try to find something that's working with the new boss, and then what's not working, and then have the team get together to try to bring that to the boss, or have one person bring to the boss, we wanted to talk about this. And to the extent you can, try to provide a suggestion. So, for example, new boss wants everybody to meet, excuse me, every single day. That could be a challenge. And instead, we want to do this. Let's see. Ooh, lots of comments. I love it. How do we deal with blocking? So blocking is when someone is keeping you from information or keeping you from advancement. The primary way to deal with blocking, number one, try to identify what's happening in the scope of it. Second is try to find a way around it. And sometimes that means being you have to move into a different group where someone's not blocking you. Other times it could mean adjusting your expectations for what you're able to get from the boss. Sometimes it could mean trying to get the information you want from someone else. So, in any case, that's some suggestions on blocking. And then someone saying their boss is the lead gossiper, that super stinks. I am so sorry. But if everybody can stop listening to the gossip, it's actually going to peter out and go away because they just want that interaction. Try talking about. Talk about a show or talk about something else. Try to change the subject so there's not bossing. There's not as much gossip. And my final scenario was if you think you're being harassed, and this one is kind of if you think you're being harassed, that's the time to talk to because of your gender, your race, anything else, that's the time to talk to HR. So that one is generally, try to get a perspective on what is happening, what are your rights legally, and what's going on. And that goes further than just some gossip or a little bit of poor behavior. This goes into the legal realm, as I mentioned. So we talked about what we were going to do in this hour. My gosh, this time has absolutely flown. So we defined workplace politics about essentially things people do to get things done and to get their needs met. Hopefully, those are good things. Sometimes, as we have seen, they are not. We talked about how to manage communication, build power, apply your values so that you can build proactive strategies to build a good reputation, build a good network, and have healthy communication and other activities to be able to kind of, it's not going to politics proof you, but it'll at least make it a little easier to handle it when politics come up. We talked about preventive strategies and we talked about reactive strategies. And then we applied these strategies to some actual examples. So I think we have 2 minutes for questions. Oh my gosh, just about over here. And I did write a book on workplace politics. So my colleague Mira Branco and I wrote about this, and we talk about a lot of this stuff. Well, I hope this has been helpful for you. I am fascinated by workplace politics. I'm also repelled when people are really yucky and behave very poorly. At the same time, I find it really interesting and fascinating to navigate. Wherever you have people, you have politics. That's just how it works. So I hope these strategies have been helpful for you. Thank you so much, everyone.